Next up on the Recovery Zone, host Stephanie Potter speaks with author Janet Cascadia about her visionary novel, The Tyranny of Psychopaths. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from The Garden Spout, specializing in indoor gardening equipment, including horticultural lighting, environmental control, hydroponic and organic nutrients, and pest control. The Garden Spout is located at 4532 Southeast 63rd, just south of Foster in Portland. Information at 503-788-GROW, and by Deacom Street Doorway, a Linton feed and seed store offering essentials for farm life in the city, including animal feeds, garden and landscape plants from local farms and nurseries, and seed garlic. Open Thursday through Saturday, 10 to 5:30 at Northeast Deacom and 8th. The entrance is on 8th. That's DeacomStreetDoorway.com. And now, the Recovery Zone.
Hi, you're tuned to KBOO Portland. I'm Stephanie Potter, and this is the Recovery Show, a show focused on healing our world. And as we pretty well know, the world is facing a lot of problems, and it needs to be healed. Just the sickness and the climate, the poverty, the wealth disparity, there's a lot of things out there that we're all concerned about. And my guest today has written a novel that lays the blame for a lot of this sickness on a mental disease commonly known as psychopathy. And she also blames it on a system that lets psychopaths basically run amok. She calls the book The Tyranny of Psychopaths, and she's written it as a novel, but it's just packed with information because apparently she's done a lot of research to sort of fill out, you know, the whole idea of this. And the thing that's especially good about this book, though, is that it finally shows a lot of ways that the people in this novel are able to overcome the tyranny, and it might give all of us a lot of good ideas for dealing with it in the real life that we're living on this real planet. So right now, I'd like to welcome Janet Cascadia to Portland, I mean to KBOO.
Thank you.
And you wanted to read, just to start it, just a speech that one of the people read at a teach-in that was in the novel. Would you
right,
like to do that?
Uh-huh,
okay.
Yeah, okay.
So,
let's just go for it. Okay. So this was a speech that was in the Tyranny of Psychopaths teach-in in the novel, and I'll explain a little bit more a little bit later about that. But anyway, let me read this speech because I think it captures at least my mindset as I was going through all of these issues. For my entire adult life, I've wondered, why are consumers sold out in the name of higher profits? Why do we continue to consume resources at an unsustainable pace? Why is everything some kind of scam designed to rob ordinary people and put them deep in debt? Why is government so inept? Why are corporations managed so badly? And why do nations go deeper and deeper into debt? Why do we, especially in the U.S., get involved in war after war? Why is everything managed so stupidly? Why is everything corrupt? And then, when I read about psychopaths, a lot of things suddenly made sense. I realized that psychopaths have risen to the highest positions of power in government, corporations, religious institutions, nonprofits, the military, and all human organizations.
Uh-huh. And that's basically what you show in this book. And your psychopath in the book is a very evil guy named Cyril.
Yeah.
It was almost stomach churning to read his notions of how things should be. But what made you write the book actually as a novel? And I mean, because I'd interviewed a while ago, you'd written this really incredible scientific book called Recycle Everything.
That's right, yeah.
How We Can, Why We Must.
Uh-huh.
This time it's a novel.
Well, I thought that a novel would enable me to explore ideas, experiences, Maybe give some visions for possible futures. Explore more like connections between ideas. And, you know, there are those who have already done a lot of research and are kind of covering that whole thing. And there are a lot of really good books out there about the research. Which I'd actually like to mention, the one that really set me down this whole path was Without Conscience by Dr. Robert Hare. Mm-hmm. And he's a professor and researcher in British Columbia. Now he's retired now, but he is one of the early people to take this notion of a psychopathic checklist, which he developed in the course of his research in the prison system in British Columbia. And reading his book was fascinating, and he is actually one that stands out, I think, in the a group of people that are still pursuing the notion of psychopaths. That it's actually psychopaths who have risen to all the positions of power in our world.
And he's written a book called Snakes in Suits.
Yes, he wrote another one, Snakes in Suits. Uh-huh. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, so I wanted to do something like that, except I compounded a number of more complications and threw in a number of different characters, you know, so that I could explore what the tyranny of psychopaths looks like from the perspective of different people, and how they all have their own unique insights into it.
And you also made, the book was inspired, it seemed like, by the Occupy movement.
Well, that's true, too, yes.
Because you had a place called Occutopia.
Yes.
In this book.
I really got reinvigorated. I had started writing the book, much farther back, but I got reinvigorated to pick up the whole thing again on the wave of the Occupy movement. And so in my book, the events of the book take place a few years or some years in the future, but I moved the Occupy movement out of the St. Francis complex, which is near to here.
Here in Portland. Yeah, the book, I must say, is set in Portland.
It's the whole book.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And I had the whole movement move into the then empty Washington High School building and take that over. So Occutopia, so it became known as Occutopia. And so Occutopia was a place for activists and for the community to help each other, to teach each other. And so that sets the stage for all of the people to come in my book to come together and to interact.
And people really were helping each other. They figured out even how to use no money. They figured out some pretty amazing stuff. You had a chunk of your book though was there's teach-ins in the book where you learn a lot through the teach-ins about like how some of these systems are working. And one of them was Christianity, fundamentalist Christianity. Mm-hmm. What made you put that in the book?
Well, I actually was an evangelical way back in an earlier, I guess you could say, in a way, a different lifetime. And I made my way out of it. And it was quite a psychological challenge. Mm-hmm. And through going through that experience and kind of putting those experiences together with what I learned about psychopaths, a lot of things came to light. And I feel that there are a lot of things embedded in modern Christianity, I guess, you know, today's Christianity.
The fundamentalist.
And especially the fundamentalist type that have actually become inserted into it from a more psychopathic perspective.
Interesting.
And it's hard to, it's hard, that's a lot to bite off, but I would direct readers to, if you'd like to read a lot about it, I've got a speech by a woman named Maranatha, and her speech is on my blog. And you can find your way there and read the whole thing.
Right. And well, basically, it seems like in both of these, you have this idea that in fundamentalist Christianity and in the whole money system that we're living under, there's this way that we're kind of enslaved. And that seemed to come through in the book in a lot of different mm-hmm, ways. Could mm-hmm. you just sort of amplify on that a little
sure.
bit?
Sure. Well, I mean, we are enslaved by our monetary system, and we can't live without money. unless, you know, very difficult to live without money. And oh gosh, there's so much to say about it. I mean, some people are in different parts of the political spectrum are highlighting the fact that all of the money in our country that we use is actually borrowed from the Fed, and so that's a whole world of discussion unto itself. But all of our money is a form of debt, and because we become indebted, we become enslaved, and the whole kind of psychopathic perspective on it is that the psychopath looks at us as a resource and asks, how can we make these people work for us? How can we set them up so that they have to work? And the monetary system is the vehicle for forcing us into their so-called economy.
And the Christian fundamentalism gets people enslaved through their fear of hell, basically?
Well, gosh, yeah. It's, you know, when you look at it, this is quite the topic, but fear, shame, guilt are all used quite, prolifically in fundamentalism. And to me, those are all things which are manipulative. And so that's kind of where I get off the train, is that anything that manipulates us through fear, guilt, shame, those are where we need to teach ourselves, you know, to say, we're not going to be manipulated.
Uh-huh. And that kind of keeping us constantly busy so that we just don't kind of space
yeah,
out.
That too, yeah.
And then
uh-huh.
that gets us back into the sort of work mode.
Right.
Anyway, this book had a lot of different connections that were all sort of flowing together. one of the you just mentioned Dr. Hare and his checklist. So let's go back to the psychopaths themselves. Basically, Dr. Hare was talking about corporate psychopaths, and there's also government psychopaths. But how would you recognize that your boss or your coworker or something was a psychopath? How would somebody know that?
Well,
like, there is some percentage of psychopaths that are heads. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a higher percentage. That was part of this?
Well, I think what the researchers are saying, and I wouldn't be able to elaborate much on how they come about their percentages, but they're actually saying like 1-2% of the population are psychopaths.
But there's more running businesses.
Well, it's a question of degree, you know, uh-huh. as well. I think that people who are victimized by psychopaths often choose the psychopathic, you know, ways of relating and ways of viewing the world as a means of survival. And so
in other words, even all of us have a little bit of it in
us. I think so.
Because we're in a sort of psychopathic system in a way.
I think so. And actually, if I can tag a little something on there, I myself, when I was thinking through this book, was looking at this system called LETS, which is the local exchange trade system, that is a system. You do have to have like a database to run it, but it's basically something you can invent in your community, and so people can get into it. And you know, I mean, if you didn't have a computer or something, you could call in or stop by the office or you know something. And so in thinking about that, I thought, okay, guess what? I want to give people straight up front, you know, when they join in, let's give them 5,000 credits, mm-hmm. you know. And so that way they can get back on their feet. They can get the things that they need, whether they're kids, you know, food, whatever. Okay, great idea. And then a little while later, and even after I wrote this book, I ran across this idea of basic income. And there's a number of books out there about that now, which the idea is that you basically give people an income, you know, that they can spend to take care of their needs, their
yeah.
basic needs.
Yeah.
And what a profound difference that would make on all of us. Think of how, you know, I mean, if you've ever been unemployed, that desperation, that anxiety, and I was on unemployment this year, And I was surprised to find it's only 6 months.
Right.
6 months.
Well, it's funny, like, because I was in Australia, and there was the dole at the time that I was there. Maybe it's still there, I hope. And you were allowed to be on the dole if you were even just doing some community service.
Oh,
and
isn't that great?
I swear that the people, I just felt relaxed to me compared to here in the U.S. Uh-huh. There was a certain... just less anxiety pervading their whole society than I felt here in America. Mm-hmm, it was very interesting. And I thought, it's the dole that's doing that. Basic income, anything that, that is sort of a safety net, basically. Yeah.
But, you know, the psychopathic angle on all of that, that is even, like you say, that we all have a little bit of the psychopathic training within us, is, you know, that it took me a little while to you know, kind of think that through and kind of go, oh, yeah, that makes sense. You know, because we've all been, you know, so trained that
that's not okay.
It's not okay. Yeah,
that
because
just
people
lazy
are
or,
they're lazy. Yeah. You know, we're evil. I don't know. And,
evil Christian, right? Okay. I'm speaking with Janet Cascadia here on the Recovery Zone on KBOO Portland, your all-community volunteer radio station. Janet is the author of a utopian novel. Basically, it's called The Tyranny of Psychopaths, a satire. And you can call in with your questions or comments, 503-231-8187. But let's get back again. How do we recognize the psychopath? What are some of their qualities?
Okay. What I did in the book was I took... actually, there's more than one checklist roaming around out there. And so I took what I thought was the best of them and modified it a little bit. Okay, so... let me read off my list here, and this I'm hoping that by doing that, it kind of forms an impression in your mind. All right, here we go. So, psychopaths lack shame, guilt, or embarrassment.
They don't ever get ashamed.
They never get embarrassed.
They do.
No, they have no empathy for their victims, and they have no remorse for the things or for the harm that they do. They lack normal human emotions and do not have the capacity for love. They have no fear. They blame others when something goes wrong, even when it's their own doing. If they are exposed, they make up an explanation. For them, it's just a game. They change their story to suit the circumstances. They are glib and superficial, deceitful and manipulative. They can be charming, and they are con artists. They often attract allies and supporters. They have a grandiose...
That's because of the charm.
Yes, Okay. Yeah, and some people, even after the psychopaths have been exposed, a psychopath has been exposed...
People still love them.
Yes. Okay. They have a grandiose sense of self-worth and a pathological egocentricity. They have a sense of entitlement. They are bad-tempered and have a low tolerance for frustration. They can be aggressive and violent. They have no, here's a curious thing, they have no intellectual capacity and they have trouble understanding metaphors and abstract concepts.
Really?
And I have more to say about that later. They are not creative. They steal the work and the ideas of others and take credit for them. If others have something of value, psychopaths take it for themselves. They see it as their duty. They lie, cheat, steal, and kill to get their way. And for them, it is a practical matter. So imagine such people in positions of power. It's hardly a wonder that this world is in deep trouble.
Okay, so, and then you were going to add a little more about the metaphors and abstract comments, why they don't...
Yeah, because, you know, it's interesting. So maybe I'll just dive into the whole brain scan thing. So Dr. Robert Hare, tell me when I need to break. Dr. Robert Hare started, I believe, going down the path of the brain scan in regard to psychopaths. His student, Dr. Kent Kyle, has taken that up and moved it forward. And now he has a large database of brain scans that he's taken from the worst psychopathic criminals to be found in the prison system in Canada. And so what he has discovered, what they were in the process of discovering and validating, is really what parts of the brain are working or not working for psychopaths. Mm-hmm. And so it comes to light that the paralimbic system of the brain is not capacitated for them as it is for us.
So what does that mean?
Well, it means, for one thing, that they don't have emotions as we do. They don't have love. They don't have empathy. They don't have sorrow. And of course, more importantly, they don't have remorse, and they're not embarrassed. Like all of the things, all the outrageous things that they do, they're never
right.
embarrassed.
They don't get nervous.
They don't get nervous, and but more importantly, it's as though they know that if they hit you over the head with a 2x4, they know in a somewhat subdued sense that they have hurt you, mm-hmm. but it's not important for them.
It's sort of like smashing an ant or something.
Yeah, which even that, you know, for some of us is
it's kind of painful. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. Something that we regret, actually.
Yeah.
But as far as the abstract ideas, I think that the thing to throw light on is that they don't actually understand consequences of their actions. So, you know, you take something like global warming. I mean, they just really don't. I think that actually they really don't get it. For them, it's
It's just too abstract and weird.
It's too abstract, and not only is it abstract, but it's a distraction and an annoyance for people who are just hell bent on, if I can put it that way, hell bent on making a profit.
We saw an article. I guess Exxon. CEOs knew back in 1977 that carbon in the atmosphere was going to be causing catastrophic global warming. This is back in 1977, and yet they continued to put out ads, didn't they, over all this time that mm-hmm. it's not a problem, that we need carbon burning if we're going to have a good economy. And it just didn't register. It was way about more profits than it was about...
Oh, gosh, yeah.
Yeah.
I read that article this morning, and, you know, to think that they would say something like, well, alternative forms of energy are not really coming up to speed very fast, so let's not bother with them. We're going to go, you know, steaming ahead with, extracting oil wherever we can find it. Essentially.
And so when people are saying, okay, but if we burn all the oil that's in the ground, it's like
right.
the number is up for the whole planet.
Right.
It just doesn't register for
it
them.
It doesn't
reality.
Really, no. I mean, it's like I was saying about the 2x4 hitting somebody. Or they know it hurts in some kind of remote way, in very superficial way. They may understand it, but they don't care. I mean,
wow.
they just, it's not important.
And another one was how... CEOs in the oil industry who are paid more are way less likely to let their companies explore renewable energy. So
uh-huh.
it's that
uh-huh, right.
same kind of thing again.
Uh-huh.
So the greed or the money, but for them making money is, you were saying,
it's
kind of a game.
Yeah, it's a game.
Uh-huh. But it's like an important game
it's
to
like,
win.
You know what it's like is they are like gamblers who are obsessed with a game.
Uh-huh.
And they just have blinders on to
about
everything
anything else.
Uh-huh.
Got it. And so, like, are there some examples of psychopaths in business besides the things that we just mentioned? Like, would you say the Koch brothers,
oh,
for
gosh,
instance?
Oh, gosh, that was what popped to my mind. Yeah, you know, the fact that I think it was Brave New Films that has a wonderful documentary about them and all of their efforts to infiltrate the education system with their so-called philosophy, you know, which is kind of go-go market entrepreneurialism, and to such an extent that they, you know, and they make these contributions to every, I mean, if you see that movie, they have made contributions to every university that you can think of. And, you know, so in return, then the university, you know, winds up accepting professors or advisors or whatever from the Koch, you know, what would you call it, cartel or, you know, something.
Yeah.
And and so that takes education down another road, which is this whole psychopathic vision of what we should be doing with this world.
Again, influencing society and
yes.
influencing all of us to be having a little more psychopathic approach.
Yes.
To things.
Uh-huh.
So that things like using as opposed to appreciating is like
uh-huh.
a big part of that.
Uh-huh.
And the other thing that I got from Cyril, the evil
uh-huh.
psychopath in your book, is that he wanted to win so bad that he kind of, in the end, it was about it was kind of a winner-take-all kind of approach things.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh, uh-huh.
So, I mean, it's like there's no stopping, ever. There's uh-huh. There's never a sense of enough.
Mm, yeah, exactly. In fact, at the end of the book, let me see if I can get to this place. I have a play, and I put this play at the end of the book. It's called The Last Psychopath. And in it, it's about a man who cheated the financial system. And I'm going to speed it up greatly here so that so you can get the idea. He had his competitors murdered, and he took for himself all the money in the world. And so, side note, once you take all the money in the world, it's no longer worth anything, is it? Okay. And in the end, he was the last person alive on Earth, you know, because of all the, murderous things that he did. And so the last
man standing is kind of the goal of the psychopath.
Well, yeah, I mean, this kind of epitomizes that sort of mentality. And so he looks out over a dead planet from his tower in the end, and he's wiping his brow because of global warming. And he's gloating about how clever he was to deceive everyone. And in the end, he shouts, "I won."
Let me top it off.
And so here's the cherry. So he says, so at that moment, the air conditioning fails. So, oh, brother, you're in trouble.
Right.
So anyway.
Right. No, but it's just, it's such a not seeing the bigger picture. That's a very interesting aspect mm-hmm. of it to me. And what's the difference then between, like, say, a sociopath and a psychopath?
Well, gosh, you know, that's a term for a lot of debate. Okay. And it's, you know, kind of pretty fine distinction. I think, you know, one of the distinctions is that the sociopath has many of the characteristics of a psychopath, but it's through the environment that they've picked them up.
And we have a caller named Robbie. Robbie? Oh, Gabby, I'm sorry, Gabby. Are you on Gabby?
I'm Gabby, yeah. I'm
Hi.
Gabriela.
And what would you like to say or ask?
Oh, I was very lucky. I got a book, and I read it, and I was very excited. And I think it's not just a good book, a smart book, but it's very brave. Brave. I adore you because I just can imagine telling a truth through a book, and I will be scared to write about something like that. But when I read it, I started to have a hope. Like, we can speak up, and actually it's natural to speak up and take care of ourselves, finally. And it's a beautiful book. I love it, and congratulations.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, and I want just say something about the psychopath or sociopath. I have a father who worked in politics, and he told me once, people who like a political position is actually a magnet for a sociopath.
A political position, right? It's not just people and heads of government. I mean, heads of corporations.
Yeah. And my father studied psychology too, not just in law and psychology and politics. And he said they are actually, because they have a lack of the emotions like we have, they using their own talent to even it up. And what is their talent? And plus, not to reach them, because they know they have a lack of something. They are intelligent people usually, and they are actually magnet for position, like working for politics, president or politicians, because they have a higher position and they're very hard to reach them and point to their mistake what they're doing, because they are sociopaths, because they actually work for society to destroying them, to using a society.
So would you have a comment on that?
Well, I think that's exactly right. That these positions, these upper positions in the upper echelons of all the, I've called them pyramidal or hierarchical organizations. That type mm-hmm. of organizational structure attracts the psychopath because a lot of reasons. We can talk about that a little bit
more. Yeah, we definitely have to do that.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Gabi, I want to thank you, and I want to let listeners know you're tuned to the
recovery. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you, really, and thank you for
really,
recommending this
it.
Book.
You're tuned to the wonderful book.
We're tuned to the Recovery Zone on KBOO Portland, your all-community volunteer radio station. I'm Stephanie Potter speaking with Janet Cascadia, author of a utopian novel, The Tyranny of Psychopaths. And again, you can call in with your thoughts and questions, 503-231-8187. And Tina is on the phone.
Yes, hello.
Hi, what would you like to add?
Hi, Janet.
Hi.
It's a pleasure to hear your interview. Thank you.
Great.
And thank you, Stephanie, too. My question is, how did you get such accurate details and insight into the psychopathic mind without having had to deal directly with them?
Well, that was a question I was having. have you, Janet, ever known a psychopath yourself?
Well, gosh, I mean, yes, it's you know, in some ways it's all pervasive. Working in corporations, if I can kind of hold their feet to the fire a bit, they are quite dysfunctional, and that is part of, you know, that experience of working in corporations is kind of one of the things that led me down this path, because I naively thought that when you go to work in an organization that people cooperate with each other and that they have, you know, goals in common, and that I don't know, things like ego would not come into play. Oh gosh, I learned so much, you know, that you know, actually that many organizations and many like subgroups or departments or managers or what have you, that they're so dysfunctional that it seems that even they don't even have anything in sight of what it is that they're trying to do, except you
get
know,
ahead for themselves.
Except for themselves, yeah. Uh-huh. And that can put at risk, what you know, the project that you're working on, the thing that your department actually does. And it's just striking to me, you know.
Well, there was a video that you recommended on your website called I Am Fishhead that sort of showed that, how they just keep sort of climbing on the shoulders of the people next to them to get up a little higher and then to get up a little higher.
Uh-huh,
it was
uh-huh.
a very interesting graphic. Uh-huh. And it seemed like it's just about getting higher in the structure, mm-hmm. which has to do, again, with a question. And by the way, Tina, thank you for your question.
Oh, I had a comment there.
Yes,
yeah.
Well,
what was your comment?
Oh, Janet, we've been emailing. I'm the one with the nocycles.wordpress.com.
Yes, site. I'd like to, and I'd like to plug your website too. Give the address again.
nocycles.wordpress.com.
Okay.
nocycles.wordpress.com. Okay.
It's mainly about trying to get politicians or psychopaths out of the political arena, because they're so self-serving that they don't even think about serving the public at all. That is not their concern, even in the minutia. You know, they just have an objective that is, How can I make this work for me? So I think that disqualifies them from having a government service job. And I've been trying to advertise, just increase psychopathy awareness to the public, because everybody assumes that psychopaths are such a small part of this world that you don't have to think about them. But in actuality, there are millions of them.
Well, if they're one or two out of every 100, yeah, that would be quite a few.
Yes.
And
yes.
If they are really good at getting to the top in the system that we have, mm-hmm. that would be a lot of influence that they're having.
Yes, they do have direct influence on everyone's decisions, and they just sound so logical at the time that you become self-serving as well. You're like, oh, what can I get? And
right,
it really directs society in the wrong direction. With that way, it just, you know, my whole goal is to increase awareness to people who have no direct experience, because I actually grew up in a family of psychopaths, and that's why Janet's book is just so amazing.
It really grabbed you.
She didn't have the direct experience with them, but she knows them.
Well, I'd like to get back to Janet then, and thank you, Tina, for your comments, because I want to ask Janet, how do they get into these hierarchical structures? I mean, what is it about? Okay, I'll take the two more callers just after we get this first question.
Okay, I'll try to make it kind of a short answer.
Yeah.
So, when you look at these organizations that are pyramidal or hierarchical, however you want to see that, these layers of management going, you know, from bottom to top, what they do is each wall of these layers going up provides additional security, secrecy and protection. So for each level up, the levels that are below don't know what are the activities.
What are they doing at the top?
What are they doing? Yeah.
They have no idea.
They have no idea. And so as you proceed upward into the organization, you have more and more protection and more secrecy. And so for the psychopath, that's ideal, mm-hmm. because, you know, and they actually try to shoot to get in closer to the top, you know, than just like the ordinary person. And so they'll get credentials. They'll do anything to get a credential, and they'll do anything to fudge their resume in order to get in there.
They don't want to start at the bottom.
Yeah, and because the more you go up, and actually Dr. Robert Hare had mentioned this, that the more you get toward the top, the more their value to the organization is perceived rather than actual. And just to contrast a little something here, when we have co-ops that are essentially flat, everybody can see what everybody else is doing. There's no secrecy, there's no protection, there's no special privilege, there's nobody giving orders. And that is ideal for keeping psychopaths
out. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
So non-hierarchical systems. And
right.
George, are you still here, George?
I am here.
Great. What would you like to add or ask?
Well, I wanted to ask, I was reading a book not long ago by an English professor, Patrick Hogan, called The Culture of Conformism. And he seems to believe that the society itself, by its particular institutions, creates systems and situations, especially, which influence our behavior very strongly. And then in reading a book, or part of a book, a long book, it was too long to read, on social psychology by Susan Fiske, it's called Social Beings, I came across a phrase that social psychology says that, well, in everything we do, the society's institutions and situations play, and system, plays some role, and that our society is very, very heavily biased toward always seeing the individual as responsible. And they say that this is, in social psychology, they call it some kind of a fundamental attribution error. And I'm wondering, does this make any sense, or is it, is this directly in some way antithetical to your book? I don't know.
Oh, no, I don't think so. Yeah, thanks for that.
Sure. Thank you so much.
Yeah, in sociology, they describe a systems view versus the individual view, and as far as responsibility or I guess I could put it that way. And so, in other words, if you have a person who is having maybe some kind of a problem, whatever, getting a job, or they have a drinking problem or something like that, that where those two views diverge is that in the society that you've just described, that the blame would go on the individual rather than the society. And if you take more of the systems view, then the blame is to be largely the society's or the system. And I would go along with the latter because so much of environment shapes who we are. And just thinking about it a little bit proactively as well, Well, a couple things. A few things spring to mind. So that we have a lot of judgmentalism toward the individual, and that the individual is to blame for his or her problems. But if you approach the individual with a sense that you value the individual and that you believe that they have something to contribute, and that they, if given opportunities, that they would take a hold and do something worthwhile. If you approach people in that way, they respond in kind. And meanwhile, if you approach them as if they're lazy bums and that they're to blame for all of their problems, then that's kind of more of a depressing and discouraging effect upon the individual. And so either way you go, you get more of what it is that your attitude is toward people and
right.
toward society.
They even in schools, they show that with students, that little kids who are assumed to be smart act smarter than the ones
exactly.
who are told
yeah,
that they're
great
dumb.
Example, yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And, okay, James, would you like to ask your question?
I like how you're piecing. It's not really a question. I guess it's more adding to the conversation.
Sure.
I haven't read the book yet, but I definitely want to pick it up after listening to this, because I was talking with somebody the other day about why our police forces have such a hard time firing cops who obviously have psychopathic tendencies. And it makes sense that if we're raised up in a system that values the psychopathic nature, that we would want people who are enforcing the laws that are made by psychopaths. You know, you want people who are just, all they want to do is get, they're reaching higher, aiming higher. So if that means hurting, and like you said, they probably realize that maybe they've hurt somebody, but it doesn't matter because they're just a stepping stone.
Right.
To where they want to get to. And it just, I don't know, it's just kind of tying a lot of things together in my mind, but it's a really interesting way of looking at it. I guess I'd never thought of it that way, that it's a, but it, I guess it would all stem from even just the founding of this country, because a lot of the people who went and colonized our nations, they believe firmly and taught to everybody else that Indigenous or First Nation peoples, they were people, but they were like trees. They were just a part of the environment.
Or
but,
slaves. We had slaves
yeah.
for years, yeah.
Kind of like a
yeah.
resource.
A resource.
Or something. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's a they became resources and commodities. They
right.
weren't seen as people. But no, your outlook really ties a lot of things together in my mind.
Oh, and thank you.
Yeah, no, it's a great analysis through your book. I really appreciate it.
Oh, good. Yeah, that's kind of what happened to me as well. Is we're beset with problems, and when I just happened to pick up the book Without Conscience, by Dr. Robert Hare, and read that, it was a real aha moment. It was an epiphany, that this is kind of the organizing principle that makes sense out of all the rest of it.
Yeah, and especially that 1-2% in the general population, but when you start getting higher and higher in the structures of our society,
yeah.
the numbers get way higher, don't they?
Well, I believe so. To really do that study, I don't know what it would take, but there are, there was.
But Dr. Hare actually studied psychopaths who were CEOs and corporations, right?
Well, no, he didn't have that opportunity, I don't think, but he studied them in the criminal system.
Uh-huh.
And because of his putting together of the checklist. Well, that was kind of, he was like the first to really break that ground, that he understood, how that would work in society and in human organizations. And so, and that in the movie, the Fishhead movie, I think was where he was trying to take that. But that would be actually something very interesting to see, would be to get the brain scans of the CEOs, which
yes, I was wondering maybe that should be something that has to be done by a corporation.
Well, actually, I believe that's what Tina is proposing. I think she's got a change.org petition going
Great.
Out there too.
I signed that petition.
Did you
by
that?
The way.
Okay, good.
Right.
Yeah. So look for that one. It's a petition to have they call it, it's exactly what it's called, is the fMRI. It's a functional MRI of the brain. That's the kind of brain scan that it is.
Of politicians.
Of politicians, yes.
Okay, so anyway, I'd like to thank you for calling us, and we apparently have somebody else on the phone. So who's this next caller? Melva. Okay, what would you like to say, Melva? Or is Melva still there? Melva? Looks like, well, Melva.
Oh, one called The Psychopath Next Door, and I was very influenced by it. And I started seeing that in people I knew, and then I started to worry about that. Then I read Psychopath Test and a couple of other books, and it started to worry me that once we decide this is an explanation from the world around us, then it becomes too easy to see it in the people around us. And there was a discussion, I think it was on KBOO, it might have even been on the show about mental illness, where if we aren't careful, and I mean, this is very valuable information, and I think it's right on in many ways, but if we aren't careful, we're going to over-ascribe it to all sorts of problems around us and write those people off.
Well, we don't want a new target of hate, in a way.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's exactly what I mean.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so if you can address it better than I can, so I'll hang up.
Oh, well, thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
I guess what I would say about that is, in a sense, it's not their fault. Because if you were born with an abnormal brain that set you up to see the world in a particular way, in a sense, that's not your fault. It's something that is carried genetically, and I think it's something that we need to understand more. Mm-hmm. If I can kind of divert for a moment, autism, you know, people used to think that was something, you know, to be avoided, something awful, et cetera, et cetera. And it's starting to come to light that people who are autistic have a wonderful ability to solve problems in unique ways because, you know, their brain works differently. And that they may in the future be a kind of a resource for us to you know, say, hey, look, how would you solve this problem? And get some like real different types of perspectives. So I think the thing to do next is to vastly expand the research that's being done, and to really understand. And it's really not just the brain either, because in my book I do talk a lot about testosterone, and so there are hormones, and there's other, you know, things out there that haven't been identified that all play into the making of a person who basically doesn't care about anything except himself or herself, and you know, his own advantage over anything else.
Yeah. Anita, we'll get to you in just a minute, but I want to just take a break here and say you're listening to Janet Cascadia, author of The Tyranny of Psychopaths. She's here with us on the Recovery Zone here on KBOO Portland. This is your volunteer community listener-supported radio station. And you can call in with your questions, 503-231-8187. And we do have Anita on the phone. But after Anita, I want to make sure we get to the soft landing, like
okay.
What we do about all this.
Okay.
So Anita, what would you like to ask? And then we'll try to get to that. Okay. Anita?
Yes. Thank you. I was, first of all, thank you both for your very thoughtful and enlightening dialogue. I think it's really important, and it's very valuable. And certainly it's an area that we need to really look more deeply at. So thank you for that. My question is to Janet is, how would you go about kind of differentiating the nuances between psychopathy, sociopathy, and narcissism? And I think, you know, your emphasis on the brain, the functionality of the brain is really important. But I'd like if you could speak to how does narcissism kind of play in the spectrum? Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. There's a lot of discussion around this, and psychopathy was actually in the DSM. If people know what that is, that's the Diagnostic Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, and it's a Bible used in the field of psychology. to define all the mental disorders. And they have subsumed, over, I think the last maybe two or three versions, they decided to subsume psychopathy and sociology.
Narcissism? Sociopath.
So, thank you. Under antisocial personality disorder, and of which narcissism is also in that complex of behaviors. And so I don't believe I can go there in terms of making any new inroads on how to make those distinctions. But to me, I think that what we need to look at is the behavior, because it's the behavior that is driving this world to the brink of destruction. And to me, the thing that we need to focus on is how to disempower the psychopaths. In a sense, you know, taking the word psychopath, okay, it's not in the DSM anymore, but people are using it more than ever on the, you know, in the common vernacular, and for good reason. And because we need to have an on the ground political, you know, sea change in terms of, you know, permitting these people to get to the top of organizations and run roughshod over all the rest of us.
Well, you know, it's interesting. And there are changes happening. Like, I just read that there is a corporation called Zappos where they're getting rid of all their managers, and everything is being run now in terms of teams.
Wow.
And it's being very much derided on Wall Street as like, oh, this is crazy, this won't work. But there are the beginnings of this happening, and that's I think it's very important. Tina, by the way, thank you for your question, or Nita, sorry, but I want to get to that, like what we need to do to change. And it seems like the two things that I really got from your book were, we need to change the whole way that we do structure, which has to go out of hierarchy. That mm-hmm. just doesn't, that's not functional, especially
right.
in the situation we're in. And we also have to change the way we use money. And you talked about that with getting into a let system.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering if you could, and you said that there's a lot of let systems actually happening now all
yeah,
over the world.
I believe
in your book, it started to work. So could you sort of get into that just a little bit more, both of those?
Okay. Let me tie the whole thing together about what we need to do in terms of transparency. And I think that is kind of the overarching concept that we need to grasp. You know, when we hear about transparency sometimes in the news, depending on what news you watch, in regard to WikiLeaks and transparency activism, which is transparency into the doings of all these people. But I think that what we need to do next is to extend the notion of transparency to two main things: the human organization, the structures of human organizations, and money. And the monetary system. And so we did, I hope everyone was able to kind of hear a little bit about the transparency of co-ops and flat organizations earlier, but I think we haven't quite taken up the monetary
side. Just for instance, the Occupy movement itself was completely transparent.
Uh-huh.
Nobody was in charge. If anybody wanted to make a comment, that was just part of it.
Right.
And to actually not have secret people or people above other people who are more secret.
Right.
Just
uh-huh.
that goes away.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
So we wouldn't even have a CIA anymore. We wouldn't have any
of
that,
right? We wouldn't need
it.
Yeah.
Right.
But in terms of let me take up the monetary
right.
side. In the book, I discuss, I put to use this concept of LETS, the local exchange trade system. And straight up, you give everybody, you know, an income that wants to join. And it's kind of a database where, you know, you get your account subtracted, added, you know, depending on your activities of what you've bought, sold, etc. But one of the key aspects about it is that everybody can see everybody else's account. And
so
I know that
all
might
know
be kind
much-
of...
Each of us has.
Yeah, in a sense, yes. I mean, you know, as far as who it is, I mean, maybe that could be something to be discussed. But if you had everybody having, I don't know, around 10,000 credits, and then suddenly someone has 1 million credits, that would be something that would jump up on your radar. is the point, mm-hmm. you know, because the money system, you know, as we were describing earlier, is a system of debt enslavement. And so the thing is, give people money. And but also let's see the whole landscape of what's happening with money. Let's have open books, you know, so there's no secrecy.
So and the whole idea of let's is you offer to do something for somebody, and then you get a credit once you've done it.
Uh-huh.
And then that person loses a credit when you've done it something's been done.
Right, exactly.
So if someone's suddenly lost a whole lot of credit, you realize they've been taking advantage of everybody else, uh-huh, and that's very apparent.
Well, the other thing it could signal is that they're disabled or something.
And then we kind of plug that with some assistance.
Uh-huh.
See, it does, the whole thing, the book was really beautiful about let's. Cheryl, are you on the phone still?
Yes, I am.
Great. What would you like to ask?
So I'm curious on, if you remember the movie Minority Report with Tom Cruise, where
yes,
they have a way of predicting crimes in the future. And then what comes down to is that has been manipulated. And so when we're talking about like fMRIs that are diagnosing potential psychopathologies, where is this going to now be utilized as the truth and then hold people accountable when results can be manipulated, or that it's not really an accurate, because personality, upbringing, and I understand the psychopathology perspective and the fact that it is, they're hardwired a certain way from birth.
Right.
But I don't know that this can be relied upon as an accurate truth to, like, base our whole society around on does that
on brain
sense?
Scans?
Right.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that we haven't talked about is education. And I think that, you know, if we can, you know, there's a lot of us, including Tina and different authors are working. There's a lot of people that are getting into getting involved in this issue to educate each other about, you know, behaviors and that we need to look for. And not that we want to pass judgment on these people, but I mean, so far we've been kind of asleep and we've permitted them to achieve positions of power over us. And we need to stop doing that. I think that would be the place to start.
And a lot of what your book was about people taking the reins back from them,
mm-hmm.
you know, by as you say, exposing them, by being more transparent.
Right.
But again, maybe what the question was you don't want to start accusing people of stuff that's not happening.
Right. Based on a test of what's possible, you know, what they're wired for, what's possible, but you know, just go ahead and kind of throwing the baby out with the bathwater, just saying, well, this is what's going to happen, so you can't come to power. You know, Abraham Lincoln said, any man can stand adversity, but to know a person's true character, give them power. And, you know, now we have power, which is money, you know? And so I feel like there's so many people who may not be wired to be a psychopath that are still abusing power.
Right. Other people are abusing power, too, not just psychopaths. Yeah.
Exactly.
But maybe it sounds like what Janet does is gets rid of the whole concept of power.
Yeah. You know, that's true. So
anyway, thank you, Cheryl. We're about to wrap up here.
Yeah, we're going to wrap. So yeah. Five things. Opportunity, incentive. Let's see if I can name them all. Incentives, opportunity, secrecy, protection, and brainwashing are the five elements that, you know, assist the psychopath in getting into power.
So we have like maybe 10 seconds for you to read this thing that you wanted to read and then
okay,
we'll have to sign out.
Okay. Well, I just wanted to throw in a little bit more about some of the things that happened in the book, because in many ways I tried to imitate, if you like, the Monkey Wrench Gang by Edward Abbey. And so I just wanted to kind of wrap up by talking about some of the exciting things that happened in the book. So the Occutopia activists saved Sam and Marilee's home from foreclosure by this eviction company by carrying the furniture out of the van back into the house. So that was a fun one. There's a more than one, but there's one in particular, infiltrator that tries to sabotage Occutopia. The
Okay.
Well, let me say this. So it's an adventurous book. There's a lot going on. It's kind of wild and crazy. I think you'll enjoy it. And by the way, you can see quite a bit of it on Amazon.
And what's your website real quick?
It's www.thetyrannyofpsychopaths.com. And by the way, I'll give you a copy. If you contact me, I'll give you a copy of the book.
Okay. So www.thetyrannyofpsychopaths.com. And just to say, I want to say thank you, Janet, for being on the Recovery Zone here.
Thank you.
Janet Cascady is the author of the novel, The Tyranny of Psychopaths. It gives a picture of what we're faced with, the coming crash, how to have a soft landing, and how we must change. This has been the Recovery Zone on KBOO Portland. And I want to thank Patsy for her fine engineering. And thank you for tuning in and to your all-volunteer, listener-supported community radio.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Grendel's, a neighborhood coffee house offering organic coffee, sandwiches for breakfast and lunch, and Wi-Fi. Proud to support KBOO, Grendel's is open every day at East Burnside and 8th. Information at 503-595-9550 or facebook.com/Grendel's Coffee House. And by Portland Saturday Market, from our hands to yours, celebrating 42 years of American arts and crafts. Freshly prepared foods with an international flavor and local music every Saturday and Sunday from February 28th through Christmas Eve. Local artisans, international food, live music. PortlandSaturdayMarket.com. This is KBOO Portland. The time is noon. Next up is the noon news, followed by Jazz Lives.
This is KBOO Headline News at Noon for Wednesday, September 23, 2015. I'm Diane Erickson.
And I'm Patrick Wilson. In local news, federal labor officials announced Tuesday that an Oregon roofing contractor will pay nearly $76,000 in overtime back wages owed to 79 employees. Bliss Roofing, Inc. of Clackamas was found in violation of the Federal Fair